Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Israeli and world music singer-songwriter legend David Broza. We'll also have a visit from our Two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our Mevina on Israel, Oshrat Barel. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. I've just returned from the Union for Reform Judaism Biennial Convention in San Diego, which is always a wonderful and restorative experience. There's nothing quite like taking part in Shabbat services with 5,000 other Jews, all singing and praying together, and the pleasure of connecting and reconnecting to rabbinical school classmates, co-workers, cantors, educators, teachers, and friends from everywhere in the Jewish world, including Israel, of course, is both delightful and highly informative. I always come back from that conference recharged, rejuvenated, and stimulated with the new ideas and possibilities flowing through a highly active, dynamic movement. Well, the big agenda item this time for the newish president of the URJ, Rabbi Rick Jacobs, was encapsulated in his phrase, audacious hospitality, which he repeated frequently in his keynote address. By that, he means what we used to call outreach, going beyond the simple providing of Jewish worship, education, counseling, and social opportunities in order to bring people into community directly and energetically. It is the new buzzword of the Reform movement in Judaism, and paired with a turn towards something called relational Judaism, that's Rabbi Ron Wolfson's clever phrase, which is a simple way of connecting to people in a warm and giving manner. It is supposed to create a raison d'être, a reason for the Reform synagogues to continue to thrive going forward. The real issue that all non-Orthodox movements in Judaism face today, and to a degree even Orthodox synagogues do too, is that it's become increasingly clear that you can no longer assume that American Jews will automatically do almost anything that used to be true of nearly every Jew. They might choose to circumcise their sons, or they might not. They might want their sons and daughters to have a bar bat mitzvah, or they might not. They might want a rabbi to bury their parents, or they might not. They might join a synagogue, or they might not. They might attend temple on the high holy days, but they might not. They might visit Israel, but they might not. They might choose to marry somebody Jewish, but they probably won't. The recent studies and surveys show that most Jews here in America are very proud of being Jews, feel very little or no negative stigma attached to it, and support Israel, at least in theory. But they also feel no strong drive to do or support many of the central elements of Jewish life that have been so integral to our people's history and identity for 2,000 years, or even for the past 200 years since emancipation. All of that makes it very complicated to assess just what those of us working in the fields of Jewish religion and identity are supposed to do next. Is the future for Judaism in America tied to a greater social media presence or to more one-on-one human contact? Are we supposed to bring more people into authentic Torah and a better connection to Hebrew and traditional wisdom? Or are we aiming for a more accessible, English-based, least common denominator kind of Jewish life? Do people want deeper meaning and more authentic community? Or are they happier with a superficial, fee-for-service kind of relationship with their temples, rabbis, Jewish community centers, and other Jewish institutions? Is liberal Judaism in 2014 and 15 going to be based on personal relationships or live streaming of services and classes? The answers are not so clear. In general, we are hearing from the experts, well, nobody really knows yet. And the instructions we get from the places and people doing what are typically called best practices range all over the map. For my part, as a congregational rabbi and cantor, I can tell you that I believe that we need to continue to offer the most meaningful and creative services and education we can, with a deep connection to authentic sources and traditions. But we also need to offer these as effectively as we can, in ways that reach people by means and media that they prefer, and by personal contact when we can. Sometimes this is nothing more innovative than doing Shabbat services beautifully, or visiting a hospital room, or teaching a good class. Sometimes it's reaching out into the community, teaching Taste of Judaism, or doing a Wandering Jews hike service in nature. Sometimes it's having an effective website and a good Facebook presence and Tumblr feed and Instagram and that sort of stuff. And sometimes it's having a great weekly radio show about Judaism. But always, always, it's making it clear that Judaism is an amazing, welcoming tradition with great insight, depth, humor, wisdom, love, and life-affirming rituals and practices that add value, meaning, and community to our lives. If we can do that, audaciously or simply with kindness and energy, we'll have a great future for Judaism in this or any country and in any century. Our guest this morning always plays and sings with energy and kindness and great creativity. David Broza is an Israeli musical legend, but also a world music star and the creator of an exceptional new album of beautiful and innovative songs recorded with Israeli, Palestinian, and other musicians in East Jerusalem. So to play us in this morning, here's our guest, David Broza, singing a song from his new CD, East Jerusalem, West Jerusalem. It's called Ramallah Tel Aviv Mix.
I live my life down by the shore. I take my walks, make love and more. Up on the hill, they live to love. The romance lingers up above. Eastern winds bring lustful scents, mixed with tears of innocence. Years of war and indifference, love and hate and self-defense. Extensions of erotic sounds. Continuous flow, the sounds of bells. The do's and don'ts, the right to be, the need to give. Oh, 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 that's where Ramallah is, Tel Aviv. As I stand up on the hill, I recognize now how it feels to see the lights that shine so bright, inviting me yet out of sight. Reality and fantasy, so close and yet so far it seems. Oh, will we see the day come soon, so we can live in harmony? Extensions of erotic sound. Continues flow the sounds of bells, the do's and don'ts, the right to be, the need to give. Oh, 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 that's where the Ramallah is, Tel Aviv. Oh, 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 that's where the Ramallah is, Tel Aviv.
That was a cut called Ramallah Tel Aviv Mix from David Broza's new CD, East Jerusalem, West Jerusalem. Hear the extraordinary story of that new release from David Broza himself when we return on Too Jewish. Parents in Tucson have many choices on where to send their children to school. Consider the best. Consider Tucson Hebrew Academy. Now is the time to secure your spot for the upcoming school year. With a beautiful Foothills K-8 campus and award-winning academics, you owe it to your children to visit THA, Tucson Hebrew Academy, and see what they have to offer. Your child belongs at THA. THA delivers. Low student-teacher ratio supports successful, rigorous academics, and they don't stop there. With an emphasis on the arts, science, and music, THA students learn the Hebrew language and are taught Jewish values along with a rigorous academic curriculum. Your child deserves the best. Call 529-3888 to schedule your tour of THA. Financial aid is available. Don't wait. Space is limited. That's 529-3888 or visit www.thaaz.org. To play in our guest this morning, here's his song from a new recording, East Jerusalem, West Jerusalem, called The Key to the Memory.
خلي النور بعينيك يضوي دروبك لقدام دايما من رحم الأوجاع بتولد رحمة الأيام خلي الخطوة فيها إصرار لتوصل آخر مسار وتلاقي مفتاح الذكرى اللي ضاع
We are delighted to welcome the two Jewish our guests this morning, the outstanding Israeli and world music entertainer, guitarist, singer, songwriter, David Broza, who has a remarkable new project. This is his first interview about his new album. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
By the way, I think the first time I ever interviewed you was by phone, and you were driving around in Spain. So this is actually a little easier.
It is easier. I'm actually in New York City while working on and preparing for the release of the album.
Tell us about this album and how it came about.
Well, it's been in the works for several years. I'll start with a quick background. About 15 years ago, I started working and associating myself with a Palestinian music group that is based out of East Jerusalem, which makes it accessible and we could meet and get to know each other. And they have a studio. Their name is Sabrine. Over the years, we've really become friends rather than colleagues and became very close. But I've managed to record quite a few recordings there and several albums. Either for Israel or for Spanish territory. I did the Spanish album, and it's in Israeli recordings. And about 3 years ago, I thought it's time that I bring my Tel Aviv musicians to experience the studio, because we don't tend to regard East Jerusalem as a place that we'd feel comfortable at as Israelis. And so it's not a no-man's land, but certainly for Israelis, it's not too obvious to go and stay there and hang out or certainly record albums or music. So, and since I've been doing it, I decided to write music that would be, would have more international appeal. And I started writing songs in English and putting them together and thinking of how I want to put out the project. And the closer I got to completing the writing and collecting all the music for the album, I started talking to my musicians and preparing them to come up and be with me for 8 days and 8 nights, as I decided that this would be the time it would take us to record and complete the album. And so last January 20th, was the date when I set for the album to be recorded. And everybody came up, the musicians from Tel Aviv came up. I set them up in a hotel nearby, very close to the studio. And I asked a friend, a great musician, American musician, Steve Earle, if he would be interested in producing the album in East Jerusalem, to which he was really happy to come and experience not only Jerusalem and Israel, but also experience being in the studio in this kind of a setting. And so we all met there January 20th, 2013, and for 8 days and 8 nights. Basically, we rolled out the songs and played them, recorded them, and completed this project.
We will talk much more with David Broza about his new album. What's the name of the album?
East Jerusalem, West Jerusalem.
Couldn't be a better name. When we come back in a few moments on Too Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
We welcome Pam and David of Freedom Smoke. So your product, a smokeless way to get off of tobacco, people don't really understand exactly what's wrong with cigarettes, or they think it's the same thing that's wrong with your product. Can you explain the difference?
That's true, Rabbi Kohan. Part of it is cigarettes themselves, the FDA made them release the ingredients. There's over 3,000 ingredients in cigarettes. There's four ingredients in electronic cigarettes. Propylene glycol, vegetable glycerine, flavorings from FlavorArt in Italy, who is who we use, and nicotine itself. Our nicotine is USP hospital grade. It's the finest that you can purchase. Nicotine in and of itself is not harmful to the human body. That's why we have so many doctors referring patients that they just cannot get to quit smoking cigarettes. They send them to us for a much healthier alternative.
And where do people go and how do they find your stuff?
They can go to one of our three stores here in Tucson. We've got one at Orange Grove and River, one at Broadway and Swan, and one at 12th and Valencia. Or they can go online to freedomsmokeusa.com.
Thanks very much, and we'll talk next week.
Always a pleasure.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com, a new email, twojewishradio18@gmail.com, or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website or download us from there at the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. We are delighted to welcome the Two Jewish Arc. Mivina on Israel, our expert. Oshrat Barel is the head of the Weintraub Israel Center here in Tucson. Boker Tov, good morning.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
So we're getting close to the end of the secular year. I want to share something. When I lived in Israel in a long time ago, in December, I remember round about, I don't know, December 20th, 22nd, something, I realized something was missing. I had not heard a single Christmas carol in any elevator, in any mall, in any store. And it was like this revelation. There's a place they don't sing Christmas carols. Does Christmas make any penetration into the Israeli psyche? Does it mean anything to Israelis at all?
No. And as a child and a young adult, I wasn't aware about Christmas. But unless you live in Haifa or Akko or parts of Jerusalem, of course, but in Beit She'an, no. But New Year's Eve is a kind of a, can I say big deal on radio?
You can say a big deal.
So yeah.
So
people celebrate, New Year's Eve.
You know, I think it's strange for Christians who think of Bethlehem and Nazareth as the places of Jesus' potential birth, and mm-hmm. knowing that these are among the holiest sites in the world, if not the holiest sites for Christians, and of course, Jerusalem, and yet. It's only the Christian minority population, and among the Arabs, of course, there are a minority of the Arabs, mm-hmm. The vast majority are Muslims, for whom Christmas is a big deal. Once you became aware of it, and Beit She'an, of course, doesn't have a very large Christian population, as some Muslims, but it doesn't have a mm-hmm. lot of Christians. Does anybody make any particular acknowledgement of Christmas?
Actually, Haifa, the city of Haifa, has every December, they are calling like December the holiday of the holidays, because sometime Hanukkah and Christmas and one of the Muslims' holiday occur in the same time. So they are celebrating all three holidays. And last year, we took the kids to see, like, you know, to
the
see...
The holiday of holidays
the holiday
Haifa.
Of the holidays, yeah, in Haifa. What's
it called, the Chag Chagim or something?
Chag Chagim, Chag Chagim.
And Haifa, of course, has had really pretty good mm-hmm. relations between Jews and Arabs, including Christian Arabs, throughout its history. So mm-hmm. It's nice to see that kind of crossover experience.
Yeah.
No pun intended about the cross. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and actually you could see like Arabs, Muslim, Christians and Jew hanging around, see performance on the street, eating, and it was very nice to see.
It's a real festival.
Yeah.
All right, and we'll talk about New Year's and what Israelis do for New Year's next week. Thanks, Oshrat.
Thank you.
When we come back on To Jewish, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week. Attention, Arizona income taxpayers. You can help send children to our community's Jewish schools without it costing you a dime. Direct your tax dollars to JETCO, J-E-T-C-O, the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization. Here's how. The state of Arizona allows its taxpayers to get a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for payments made to recognized school tuition organizations, who then provide scholarships for kids from kindergarten through 12th grade to attend qualified private schools. JETCO helps provide a quality Jewish education to children in need at Congregation Anshe Israel Kindergarten, Tucson Jewish Community Center Kindergarten, Temple Emmanuel Kindergarten, and the Tucson Hebrew Academy. If you pay Arizona state income tax and make your contribution to JETCO, you'll get a 100% tax credit on your Arizona state income tax return. Tax credit's not a deduction. Your taxes are reduced by the amount you give. Join over 750 supporters last year who donated money to JETCO and got it all back in the form of reduced or refunded state income taxes. There's an additional tax credit now, the switcher credit, which increases the maximum donation you can make to JETCO to $1,031 for single filers, $2,062 for married couples filing jointly. When we are fighting every day for the continuity of the Jewish people, we should all take advantage of this great opportunity. JETCO is one way to help foster a Jewish identity for our community's children. Contributions to JETCO have helped hundreds of children receive the financial aid they need to receive a good Jewish education. To direct your tax dollars to Jewish education today, call 520-647-8442, again 647-8442, or visit JETCO on the web at www.jetco.org. Help give the gift of education.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
You know, Tom, I had an odd experience at an event. I sat next to a guy who's a special agent for the DEA, and we ended up talking about the connection between international terrorism and drugs and Islam, and how did it all play out? And it became more and more interesting and more complicated. Any thoughts you have on that rather tricky little subject?
Well, first of all, for those of your listeners who may not know, DEA stands for the Drug Enforcement Agency.
Sorry.
And is an international agency that combats the trade in illicit drugs, which is clearly closely linked to terrorism. And one of the thoughts you shared with me before we started recording was that the recent events in Egypt and perhaps elsewhere in the Arab Spring, so-called, had more to do with vacillations or variations in the drug supply
right,
than with any religious.
Hashish wasn't available or was interdicted or something happened and it wasn't typically available in Egypt and people began to get upset about that because they were used to it. And just a strange story that I heard.
Right. So I guess I have several comments related to the links between the trade in illicit drugs, terrorism, and the kleptocracies that pass as governments in many developing countries. Transparency and accountability and good governance are unfortunately rare things in the world. And the vast majority of countries, when looked at with an unjaundiced eye, have one degree or another of corruption reaching to sometimes the very highest levels of government, sometimes only local or regional governments, sometimes low levels of national governments. But, I mean, one of the most interesting conversations I ever had with a New York cabbie was a guy from Ghana who was driving the cab. And I recognized instantly that he was from West Africa. And, you know, after an exchange of two or three sentences, I said, are you from Nigeria or Ghana? He said, Ghana, how did you know? And I said, well, I was posted in the Ivory Coast. I've been to Ghana a few times. I love the sense of humor, whatever. And we started talking about why Africa was so poor. And he said, well, you know, our leaders are not honest, and they basically steal money from the people and impoverish the countries and build up big bank accounts in Switzerland till they get chased out, and then they go live off their savings. And I said, yeah, that seems unfortunately very common in Africa. He said, you know, you really understand our continent. You should be king of Africa. And then he turned off the meter and gave me a free ride into the city from the airport.
I hope you put that money into a Swiss bank account for later use.
Right. Well, he probably saved me $10 by doing that. And it was a funny conversation. But, I mean, obviously, it's a gross oversimplification. But one of the illicit sources of funds in many developing countries, including those in the Muslim world, happens to be the drug trade, whether it's hash in Egypt or opium poppies in Afghanistan. That was the bread and butter of the Taliban. That was how they made their money. And so fighting the Taliban was as much a State Department and CIA objective as it was a DEA objective. And the business of international terrorism and international drug trafficking gets very intertwined and very complicated. And I'll give you some examples from around the world the next time we talk.
That sounds like a fascinating subject. We'll keep exploring it. Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie new, brought to you by Two Jewish as a public service. But first a note. While it's customary, some would say mandatory, for all Jews to go out for Chinese food on Christmas Eve, December 24th, my all-time favorite line on the subject comes from the movie My Favorite Year. The lead character tells his non-Jewish girlfriend, Catherine, Jews know two things, suffering and where to find great Chinese food. So this December 24th, please enjoy your Chinese food. But this next joke is a kind of reversal on that theme. Two Jewish guys are sitting in a deli in a very Jewish neighborhood. They're talking in Yiddish between themselves. An obviously Chinese waiter comes up and in fluent and impeccable Yiddish asks them, is everything okay? Can he get them anything? And like that. The Jewish guys are dumbfounded. My God, where did he learn such perfect Yiddish, they ask. They pay the bill and then they call over the manager. So, where did your Chinese waiter learn such fabulous Yiddish, they ask. The owner looks around and leans in so nobody will hear. He says, shh, shah. He thinks we're teaching him English. In honor of the Chinese food tradition, that was the old Jewish joke of the week. Special feature, Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week we continue with the truly greatest story ever told, the great Exodus narrative of slavery and plagues and liberation. As Va'era begins, the Israelites are in Egyptian slavery, and the mysterious figure of Moses has returned to try to free them from bondage. In Va'era, God brings about a series of plagues that traumatize the Egyptians and bedevil the Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Blood, frogs, lice, wild beasts, boils, and cattle disease serially afflict the land and its inhabitants, or at least the non-Israelite inhabitants. In next week's Torah portion of Bo, four more plagues will come, hail, locusts, and darkness, leading up to the climactic death scene of the slaying of the firstborn, and then the ultimate exodus, the great moment in which our ancestors are freed from slavery, the model for narratives of deliverance and emancipation ever after. You know, the plagues are interesting in and of themselves. There are three sets of three plagues each, increasing in severity and complexity. Every one designed to prove the power of the true God and the impotence of the pagan gods of Egypt. The Nile River was the principal deity of Egypt as well as the source of its life and livelihood. And so, for the first plague, God simply turns that river to blood. There are frog gods in the Egyptian pantheon, and they are next turned into pests that infest homes and fields. The scarab is a sacred beetle to Egyptians, a symbol of Pharaoh's power. Insects are then used to torment the inhabitants, and so it goes. Sacred cows get diseases. The fertility of the holy land of Egypt itself is destroyed. Finally, even the great Ra, the solar disk of the sun itself, is blotted out for days. The plagues are a statement of theology. There is only one God, and those who adhere to other gods and use their own power to enslave others will be overthrown with power and majesty. The arrogant will be overcome. Freedom will be guaranteed, and justice, through the true God, will triumph. It's a message that still has resonance today. Whenever we come to believe that evil is destined to reign, that those who enslave others will rule, that those who use their control for malign purposes are destined to flourish, we should reread this plagues narrative in Exodus. For at heart, this is a universe created by God, for good. When we increase justice, we are simply doing the work for which we were made. When we create liberation, we are fulfilling God's great promise. When we come back on Too Jewish, our guest, the outstanding singer-songwriter, guitar virtuoso, and world music star, Israeli David Broza, will explain how he came to create an album in Palestinian East Jerusalem, using musicians from all over the world, and why it represents everything music can really be at its best. Find out when we return on Too Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114. We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
A strange and interesting story flew out of Bolivia last week in the person of Hasidic businessman Jacob Ostreicher, and it involves international investing, judicial corruption, a connection to the drug trade, Brooklyn Assemblyman Dov Hykind, two U.S. congressmen, and of all people, actor Sean Penn. The story goes like this. Ostreicher, a native of the Hasidic area of Brooklyn, was a successful U.S. flooring contractor who got involved in a large investment in a Bolivian rice farm. Ostreicher became concerned that he was being cheated by his Bolivian partner, and he flew to Bolivia to investigate back in 2011. His partner, who seems to have been involved with drug producers and traffickers, worked with the corrupt Bolivian judicial system, and Ostreicher himself ended up being accused by Bolivian authorities of laundering drug money, a charge he has strongly denied. He was never charged formally by prosecutors, but in June of 2011, he became the only American in the notorious Palmasola prison, a complex with 3,500 prisoners ruled internally by an inmates committee. Ostreicher says he was assaulted and humiliated until he paid bribes to committee functionaries. His case drew international attention, and after a rally on Ostreicher's behalf, arranged by Dov Hykind, two leading New York U.S. congressmen, Gerald Nadler and Chris Smith, tried to get him freed as well. In spite of the fact that in June, Bolivian authorities arrested 15 people, including government officials and the judges in Ostreicher's case, on charges of engineering his arrest in hopes of extorting cash payments from Ostreicher, Nonetheless, he was still kept in prison in Bolivia. Actor Sean Penn was contacted by an organization that aids Jewish prisoners. He traveled to Bolivia in December a year ago to make a public appeal for Oestreicher's release. Finally, Oestreicher was let out of prison on bail but confined to his home on house arrest. The authorities in Bolivia refused to let him leave the country. But last week, with the help of unnamed individuals and organizations, Jacob Oestreicher finally returned to the U.S. through L.A., apparently after a ransom was paid to more unnamed parties. Sean Penn met with him after his release. Oestreicher is now safe and receiving medical treatment. Bolivia is said to be considered seeking extradition of Oestreicher back to its corrupt judicial system, although it seems highly unlikely the U.S. State Department will consent to that. Well, not your ordinary Jewish news story. Kol hakavod to Sean Penn, a fine actor with a mixed reputation in the past, who has fulfilled the great mitzvah of assisting in pidyon shvuyim, saving captives held unjustly. In other news, Israeli ambassador to the U.S. Ron Dermer last week slammed the American Studies Association, the ASA, decision to boycott Israeli universities, calling the move a travesty and hinting that it constituted anti-Semitism. The singling out of the Jewish state for boycott is no different than the many attempts throughout history to single out Jews and hold them to a different standard, Dermer said. There's a name for that phenomenon. Perhaps one of the distinguished professors of the ASA could teach his boycotting colleagues what it is. The ambassador lamented that the ASA, rather than standing up for academic freedom and human rights by boycotting countries where professors are imprisoned for their views, chose to lash out against Israel, where academics are free to say what they want, write what they want, and research what they want. Ambassador Dermer's comments contrasted with a more restrained response in Jerusalem, where diplomatic officials cautioned against playing into the hands of boycott activists looking to stir up debate over Israel. That a small, radical academic union votes to boycott Israel is not a state affair that necessitates a formal response from the government, said the foreign ministry. The BDS, that's Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement, is not a strategic threat to Israel, the official added, noting that occasionally the movement has some success that garners disproportionate media attention. Every once in a while, they'll get a celebrity like Roger Waters or physicist Stephen Hawking who speaks up for them, but that doesn't mean this is a wave or a widespread phenomenon. The 5,000-member ASA, American Studies Association, which describes itself as the nation's oldest and largest association devoted to the interdisciplinary study of American culture and history, announced that it would participate in a boycott of Israeli universities and academic institutions last week. This is the second educational group in the U.S. to adopt a boycott. The Association for Asian American Studies did so in April. However, the vastly larger and far more influential American Association of University Professors recently reiterated its opposition to any boycott. In a good news story, Israel will now renew regular flights to Turkey following a hiatus of more than 5 years, said Israeli Transportation Minister Israel Katz last week. Civil Aviation Authority Director General Gura Ram and his Turkish counterpart Bilal Ekşi signed an agreement in Ankara last week allowing for the renewal of flights by Israeli carriers to Turkey. That announcement follows months of discussion between the two countries' aviation authorities. Direct flights, you may remember, were suspended in the wake of the Mavi Marmara controversy about 5 years ago. Well, it's good to have that connection reestablished between the two most coherent countries in the Middle East, Israel and Turkey. And that's the two Jewish news of Jews around the world. We are delighted to welcome back the two Jewish art guests this morning, the outstanding Israeli and world music musician, entertainer, composer, David Broza, who's been a favorite guest of Two Jewish over the years. Your new album, East Jerusalem, West Jerusalem, has a really wonderful cut on it, which is, I think it's called East Jerusalem, West Jerusalem, Shalom, Salam. It really has that sort of feel of connectivity. On the album, you worked with Wyclef Jean. Tell us about that experience.
Yeah, Wycliffe is he's known for his original band, the Fugees, and he and I got to know each other and started working together about 8 years ago when he met me in a evening somewhere in Los Angeles, and the next day we were in New York, and he said, "Why don't you come down to the studio?" So I used to frequent his recording studio, and we did quite a few jams together and recorded some things together, and it was something that I suddenly in the years that went by I kept him on the low burner, thinking I'm going to turn to him at some point for some special project. And I always teased him, said, "Well, you got to come out to Tel Aviv, come and see the old city of Jerusalem, see the holy places," and he always kind of laughed. Anyhow, but 2 years ago, I called him up and I said, "Look, this is it. I want to do this project, and I'm writing the music now. Let's write a song together, and then come down and come over to Israel, and I'll take you to East Jerusalem. You'll meet the Palestinian musicians. I'll show you around all the different aspects and sides of society there, besides the incredible, you know, history." And so the thing to do was to write the song together, which we did one night. It was late. Early morning hours in the studio in Harlem, New York City. And I came home with this beautiful song that we'd just written, playing live. It was, and that the actual recording that we have on the album is that particular session.
Wow.
There was nothing, we had no other, we hadn't met again in the studio. We met a couple more times on stage when I would come down to one of the shows here and jam with him, but we never really met in the studio again, so there was no correcting it, no perfecting it. And when I was in the studio in East Jerusalem, I actually called and asked for his office to send me the files so we could record some additional instruments on it in the studio in East Jerusalem. So having done all that and started playing around with the different titles for the album, the song seemed to be the most obvious song that would really convey everything we wanted to convey in the album, and retain also an innocence to it. And so I think this was a very appropriate song as the title song for the album. And who knows? Maybe this is what will bring Wycliffe Jean to Israel to perform it with me.
That'd be fantastic. I'm sure that'd be a great concert. You used a lot of covers on the album and a lot of original material both. The covers are chosen, I'm sure, not just thematically, but certainly thematically. You know, What's So Funny About Peace, Love, and Understanding by Nick Lowe, Why Can't We Live Together by Timmy Thomas, Cat Stevens, Where the Children Play. But you also chose them musically, right? How did you decide what to include on the album for the group of musicians you're working with?
That's a good question. And also, doing covers is not something that I normally do, and I've never really done covers in my American albums. This is, by the way, my sixth American album. My previous one was Townsend Zant Poetry that I wrote music to, and there's others which are all based on American poetry. Well, one thing, for example, the Elvis Costello song, Every Day I Write the Book, is a song that I've been really waiting for years and years to do my own rendition. I fell in love with it when it came out in the 80s, and I always thought one day I'll do my own version to it, and this was the opportunity to do it. The theme of, for example, the song Mother, which is a Pink Floyd piece, and Roger Waters wrote it. It's not that I listen to Pink Floyd anymore. I did at some point when I was a teenager, but I was much more into singer-songwriters. However, that particular song really got me, and I wanted to, and I saw it more as a singer-songwriter song, not as a big thematic epic. And it felt like I could tell it like a troubadour, almost sitting down by the walls. Either the dividing wall, which is the new thing in the Middle East, or the old city walls, or
the Ottoman walls, any wall.
Yeah, and I felt I could do a rendition that would be a guy with a guitar singing it and putting out all the pain that it represents, you know, to me, these walls are very psychological. I mean, in the old days, these were the walls that really safeguarded a city from enemies. But today, there's a lot more psychological aspect to it, and that is where I connect with it, because there's a big wall that's dividing the peoples. It happens here in the United States. It happens everywhere between the different communities. There's always a wall, a psychological barrier. And some people, you know, refer to areas that they live in as the ghetto, the Latino ghetto, the Jewish ghetto, the African-American ghetto, you know. But it's really a psychological thing. People feel safer if they're behind that wall that they built. And I'm about, you know, I respect the walls, but I want to break them. So there's always something a little more profound behind the choice. You know, Cat Stevens, I used to busk when I was a teenager, and Cat Stevens was one of the artists I would busk with. Excuse me. There's also something about each and every of these artists who, not Nick Lowe, of course, and not Timmy Thomas, but, you know, between Roger Waters, Elvis Costello, and Cat Stevens, support for boycott and this harsh criticism of the situation,
right.
And of Israel and the handling of the situation by Israeli governments, and to which I may support and I agree at certain points, but I also have my own way of looking at things, and I think that if you want to bring a change, you got to deal with it directly. And if you're not going to bring a change, then my opinion about certain aspects of things that are happening in the United States or in Spain or in Britain or in Europe are useless unless I'm planning to do something about it. It's not, you know, not just being a wise guy. So on the one hand, I'm singing those songs with a lot of love. And on the other hand, I have a certain opinion about the guys who wrote it. And I'm trying to show that the art and the music goes much further than perhaps the people who gave birth to it. And we are taking and echoing those songs and those wonderful pieces of song music across the walls and in the East Jerusalem, West Jerusalem scenario. And it's working, and it's beautiful, and it's past and beyond politics. And I want this to be a very clear picture that this is past politics and beyond politics. This is about the people. And that's why this music is so strong and so, to me, so valuable and works so well.
What a fantastic description and approach. You worked with these musicians, but you said you wanted it to be more than just a recording session or just time spent in the studio as collaborators. So you guys ate together, drank together, hung out. What do you think the ongoing impact is on this group that you worked with?
You know, it wasn't my idea to come to East Jerusalem, do an album, and walk away with an album. I have been there, as I said, for 15 years, 14 years, since 1999. I've been coming frequently and been spending more time in the East Jerusalem studio and with the people that come there, and most of them are Palestinians, more than I go to any studio anywhere in the world. I spend time there. We have parties there on a regular basis for years. We get close together. We during intifadas, during different situations in Gaza and Lebanon, we're together. We stick together. We go through hard times together, and we go through wonderful times together. And so, my whole concept and the whole approach to making this album, being together the 8 days and eight nights with Steve Earle and the Israeli musicians, and making our presence there and creating this beautiful music, is a way of life. It's not about proving a point. I do not prove a point. I think I'm living the point. And this is what it's about. It's about hopefully inspiring others to stop worrying about worrying. Just get going, do something. And we're artists. We're entitled to make mistakes. We're entitled to dream dreams that others cannot. And we're entitled, we pay a price for it. A price by the fact that a lot of times what we say is not interesting. What we say, it doesn't make a point. But if you don't keep on trying, you never do know if you're going to make a point. And so I'm hoping that my work now will have artistic magic to it. And once you see the magic, you go to find out a little bit about what's behind that magic. And you suddenly realize that these 8 days and eight nights took place in the most impossible, perhaps, settings, and created such a beauty. So I think this is beyond my incredible experience and my exhilarated feeling now. It's about inspiring others to take initiatives wherever they may be, if it's in Mexico, Colombia, and East LA, and in New York City, or in Phoenix, Arizona. Wherever.
I want to ask about one more song on the album. You recorded a song called Lion's Den, which was based on a poem written by Judea Pearl, Daniel Pearl's father, Halav HaShalom. It's a very powerful poem. It's a beautiful song. Tell us about how that came about.
Well, I was playing around with different titles for the album as I was in the project 3 years ago, as I started talking to people about it and getting people excited. So at the time, I just thought, okay, let's call it The Lion's Den. And one day I was telling this to a friend of mine, and you may know him, Peter Himmelman, the singer-songwriter. And Peter said, well, this is interesting that you're talking about this project of yours. I just heard Judah Pearl give a little speech in the synagogue couple of days ago, and he read a poem called The Lion's Den. I said, this is really, I know these people, and of course I know the tragedy that they've gone through and the tragic death of Daniel Pearl. And so I thought this is like a blessing somewhere and a sign. So I asked to communicate to Judea Pearl about my project and if I could please read the poem. And he sent me, it was a long poem, very long poem, and I did what I've done for many, many years, whether it was a Walt Whitman poem or Elizabeth Bishop poem or Anne Sexton or Lorca or Altman. I've always worked with poetry, and I've learned how to edit poetry to song. So I worked on this for a few months. Once I got that going, I could actually identify the music that's hiding within the words, and then I wrote the melody. And what I think we have is, I hope that in the memory of Daniel Pearl, and for to strengthen the pain, to ease the pain, to strengthen the spirit of the family of Daniel Pearl, I hope this song will add a little bit of something to their lives. And in the context of the album that I'm just releasing, it is a personal way of saying that, you know, you can't get away with these tragic actions, these violent actions. The people may be put to death. The people may be overpowered by evil, but the good will come. No matter what it is, somebody's going to carry that torch, and there'll be many of us meeting on the road, and there'll be a lot of torches. And I truly believe in that. So I hope that this song in the album will be like a beacon somewhere.
I think the whole album's a beacon. East Jerusalem, West Jerusalem is the album. Listen to it. It's gorgeous. You'll hear a little bit of this on the show. I want to thank David Broza for a great visit here on Two Jewish. Thank you. Thank you, David. When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical playout on Two Jewish.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Two Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 o'clock. Our guest will be Israeli Ambassador Asher Naim, whose career included serving as the key point man on getting the Ethiopian Jewish community to Israel and also negotiating the transit of Jews from the Soviet Union to freedom. He's a fascinating man with fabulous stories to tell. Our playout this morning comes from our guest David Broza. It's a cover of the classic tune, What's So Funny About Peace, Love, and Understanding. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week we pray of peace, love, and understanding.
As I walk on through troubled times, my spirit gets so downhearted sometimes. So where are the strong? And who are the trusted? And where is the harmony, sweet harmony? 'Cause each time I feel it slipping away, it just makes me want to cry. What's so funny about peace, love, and understanding? So funny about peace, love, and understanding. So where are the strong? And who are the trusted? And where is the heart? Each time I feel it slipping away, it just makes me want to cry. So what's so funny about peace, love, and honor?